people. Ink Studs, Thursday, 2 p.m. That was Radiohead with No Surprises, and I'm joined by my special guest, Matt Locks. Have I got you, Matt?
Yeah, you got me.
Awesome. Great. Last week we had some minor technical difficulties, which required 15 minutes of banging my head against the table until the mixing board worked. And I think it worked. At least I hope that's the reason it worked. We're going to talk about your new book, Side Scrollers. Well, I guess it's new-ish. It came out in October at SPX, so where I picked it up, in fact, and quite enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you.
So how are you doing today?
Very good. Very good. A little cold here in New York right now.
Oh, really?
We had a cold snap. It was warm for a while, but we just got the snap.
You get, like, the warm snap there, the cold snap, and the stink snap.
Yeah, we're getting it all.
Yeah. You're in Queens, isn't it? Or Brooklyn? Or are you right in Manhattan?
I'm in Brooklyn right now.
Okay.
As cold as it is in Queens, though.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not very far from... So, let's talk a little bit about side-scrollers, about video games. I mean, anyone who's listening who's played a video game, you should know what a side-scroller is. It's a lost art. Is that a good way of putting it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I miss the day of, you know, knowing where you're going and not being stumbling over bodies and shooting at things a la Doom and Quake and all that crap.
Yeah, you know, I hate to sound like an old man, but the 3D games are almost beyond me now.
Yeah. Well, that's something when reading it, it was like we're of the same age, because it's like all the video game references. It's Link, you know. The Pokemon, I don't know the Pokemon. I'll be honest. That's just a little bit, you know, beyond my age. I'm 28. So maybe there's that slight, you're 27, I think it said at the back there.
Yeah, well, I threw that in. That was just a little reference in the book. It's more for Nintendo fans, since that originated as a Nintendo game.
Ah.
Before it was a big popular TV show and whatnot.
I actually have issues with the whole Pokemon phase, but we'll keep that out of...
I think a lot of people our age does.
Yeah, well, it ruins many comic stores where they get infused with that, you know, quick buck of the card, and, you know, then you're going to go buy your comics and you're stumbling over a bunch of 12-year-olds yelling at each other over cards.
Yeah.
I have a lot of opinions. So side-scrollers. Why side-scrollers? So it's your first time writing and drawing a book. Previously you had drawn, but I haven't written, or I haven't read, the F-Stop.
Yep.
Also from Oni Books.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a funny story. The first time I got involved with Oni, I actually had met back when Jamie Rich was the editor. He's the editor-in-chief for a little while.
When they first started it, and for quite a while, I think.
It was for more than quite a while, actually, I guess. I think it was founded by Bob Schreck, but Jamie was the head editor for a while, I think until almost a year ago. But anyway, I met him at a convention here in New York one time, and this is when I was maybe a year or two out of school. I went to School of Visual Arts here in New York City, and I had basically done a mini, which was the first, like, for beginning of side-scrollers. I had just done a mini of it, and it was not the same art that you would see in the book, but it was just, like, the first pass I ever did. It was, like, one of the first, like, minis I had put together, too, and I gave it to him, and I was just interested. I told him, you know, if you guys are interested, I could love to work with you guys. And he kind of continued to email me for the next, like, half a year. You know, they passed on it at the time, but he was definitely kind of interested in my stuff. And after about half a year, they asked me if I was interested in doing F-Stop, which was written by Anthony Johnston, and I was like, yeah, I'd love to. That's my first real gig, I guess. So we spent the whole next year basically working on that, and then at that time, Jamie left, and James Lucas Jones became the head editor. And basically, towards the end of F-Stop, they asked me what I wanted to do next, and I'm like, well, I was... like to do this story I kind of started, and I kind of drew up a new pitch and did a few new art pieces for it, and somehow I talked them into doing it, and then we went ahead with it. So it was kind of a long process from that side.
Now, how long have you worked on, or how long did Side Scrollers take you? Because it's not a little book. I don't even know how many pages. It's over 150.
207, I
207.
Think.
207, wow.
207 live pages. There's the extra stuff. I think it totals up to 216, but Yeah, that was, it took me about a year, probably over a year, including writing and all that stuff. I don't know, I work relatively quickly, but, you know, I have other things going on, you know, other jobs and stuff that kind of detoured me here and there. But, you know, it was about a year, I'd say.
Now, side school, these are your friends, you and your friends, it's kind of a fictional take on your adolescence.
Exactly. That's a really good way to put it. I actually thought about that, how I would define this book, because the three main characters, one of them which is based on me, the other two are based on two friends of mine from when I was younger, still very good friends of mine today. But it's by no means autobiographical. It's sort of just a fictional version of us in the suburbs where I grew up. You know, I grew up in Connecticut, suburbs of Connecticut. And I guess I the best way I could define it is it's almost like historical fiction, but without Abe Lincoln or anything fun like that.
Contemporary historical fiction.
Contemporary historical fiction.
There we go. Now, let's start a bit about your early comic interests, then we'll go through your schooling and yada, 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 and get into kind of like the book and some other stuff. So,
sure.
What were you really into as a kid with comics? Or were you just more of a video gamer?
Well, when I was very young, I think I was into Peanuts comics a lot. My grandmother used to get them at yard sales, and I used to read them all the time. Like the little collections that they used to have. I really liked Garfield when I was pretty young too. And also stuff like Disney comics. And it took a little while actually till I got into superhero type stuff, and that was more like when I was, you know, a preteen. But the video games took hold like long before the superhero type comics took hold. I was like of the perfect age basically for video games. I was just a little bit late for Atari. I did have an Atari when I was pretty young. Me and my brother split the cost and got an Atari. And
because I was going to say the book is presented in Awesome Vision, which is a throwback to Coleco.
Intellivision reference. That's you know, I didn't have an Intellivision, but I used to play it over a friend's house. My friend Brian, who's actually featured in the book, still has his Intellivision. I was loved video games. I just loved the adventure aspect of them, and you know, to now the old 8-bit Nintendo games seem kind of cheesy graphics wise, but I don't know, at the time they just definitely inspired me. Games like Zelda, where you're basically questing in like a fantasy world, or like space video games like I can't think of one offhand, or like Mega Man. You know, that's the ultimate robot fun. That's a great game. And I was into that for quite a while, probably to the hair pulling of my parents. But
was it an issue for you going through art school?
Well, not really. I always did my work, but all my downtime, a lot of it was spent playing N64 games with friends of mine. I think the game of choice was GoldenEye those years.
Oh, I love that one.
That was the only shooter I ever was sort of good at.
You know, I had fun with it, and pissed off some friends because I actually got pretty good at it, and you could actually really get some really good angles and be able to pick people off good.
So. Yeah, that was a good game. It's a good group game, so it's perfect for college.
Now, you went to... What was your art education there that you took?
Well, I went to a high school that had an art department, which was gave me a big step up when I went to college. So I was able to coast through the foundation year. Most colleges have the freshman year is kind of a foundation year where you have basic drawing, painting, this or that courses. I was able to kind of get out of several of those because of my high school art schooling. But I majored in illustration. SVA is actually pretty well known for their cartooning department. I think a lot of pretty famous cartoonists came from there. Like Joe Quesada, I believe, was graduated there.
Editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics.
Yeah. As well as many others. And we had some great teachers, too, like Klaus Janson.
Oh, wow.
Dark Knight fame was a teacher of ours.
80s inker extraordinaire.
Yeah, fantastic. And he's a really nice guy. Very helpful. I was an illustration major, but I did take a lot of cartooning classes. I was definitely interested in that. But I mainly painted all through college. And it wasn't until like my senior year that I kind of started thinking that cartooning might be a way to go.
Now, your art style, it's kind of a mix between like some kind of manga influence. And I was almost thinking a little bit of like hip-hop art influence in there. Is that just me being crazy or...
The hip-hop art kind of snuck in. I really appreciate hip-hop art, but I wouldn't say I'm a hip-hop art type of person. I like the sort of thing that, like, Mahfood does and, or Dave Crossland. Like, I love that stuff, and I really admire, like, their take on hip-hop art. But actual, like, graffiti type stuff, I don't really know a whole lot about it, other than just general appreciation. And also living in New York, you see a lot of that stuff, actually, just on the wall. But I think the anime influence is definitely there. I was into that pretty early on in high school, and not as into it as I used to be, but I definitely that definitely was an influence, definitely.
Well, it seems with Oni Books, there's kind of this like neo manga style.
Yeah.
Like with your work and Brian Lee O'Malley and some other stuff. Even Corey Lewis isn't so much like that, but... very manga influenced.
I always kind of considered Oni's like a West Coast indie comics. They just have a real West Coast flavor to me, and that kind of incorporates some Asian influence.
Is there much of a manga as a manga community in New York?
Oh yeah, especially now. There always was. You know, there used to be like special little hole-in-the-wall stores I would go to get different videos or different comics. Like in Chinatown used to be like the prime place to get good bootlegs, still is actually, of anime. And there are also some clubs and stuff. Like my school had an anime club that used to... I don't think I ever actually went to it, but...
It was there.
A lot of friends who went to it. I actually went to school at the artist Becky Clunan. Went to school with me, and she actually was pretty involved with the anime club.
She's great stuff. I'm a big fan of her work.
Oh yeah, me too.
I'm quite enjoying American version and demo. It was quite nice.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's kind of interesting. That's two different takes on the, you know, modern neo manga style, because hers is more of a kind of gritty, pulp-esque. But I don't want to say pulp-esque because
that's kind of interesting because. My school is really, it's kind of funny, there's a whole style that kind of comes out of my school that it's almost like a stereotypical school visual arts cartoonist kind of style, and it is kind of a little on the pulpy side, but I don't know if you know the anthology Meat House.
Yep, oh yeah, I've had James Jean on here, and Brandon Graham comes up to Vancouver occasionally.
Oh yeah, they're great guys. They basically started SVA, I'm sure they already talked about that. And that whole kind of, it has a very similar feel to it, kind of a gritty New York-y kind of feel to it. And that definitely was, you know, that's still coming out of the SVA today. But there's also a kind of a bigger manga style coming out of SVA right now, which is pretty interesting, especially with the rise of Tokyo Pop.
So you still keep in touch and see what's going on there?
I'd like to.
Now, what was it that... Side-scrollers, it's a thing I enjoyed. It was a fun book. It was a nice change. And most of the other stuff I read tends to be the more navel-gazing, introspective stuff. So it's enjoyable to take a break from stuff and just have a fun read. What was it for you that you want, why that story was important to you?
Well, it was a story. The story itself had been in my head for a while. Like, I had actually, I think the first incarnation I ever wrote of it was when I was in school, and that was in the 90s. I remember, I think I even did the first half of it for an assignment, perhaps, or the writing-wise. I never drew anything until I got out of school, but basically, because I had thought about it since I was actually with those guys working at a burger-flipping joint and just talking about how mundane our life was, but also the funny situations that we would get into, And we also kind of thought it would be kind of funny to write some of this down. And that's kind of where the ideas originally came from. I think a lot of it, since it really is not by no means a factual book in any way, a lot of them really are just kind of spring from different jokes that we had during that time. Like the, although there are a few things that are seeds of truth are in this book. One in particular, in the book there's a character who is a demonic cat.
The Hellcat
was by the devil.
By far one of my favorite characters in the book.
Yeah, well, that cat's real. my friend Liz, actually, her cat used to attack us all the time whenever we would go over her house. And thank God the thing was declawed, or else we would have been torn to shreds long ago.
I have a similar story. A house I used to live in, we had a neighbor who had this cat they called Cartman, which was an oddly accurate name. It was the most bitter, hateful thing, and I was having a very large New Year's party, and it snuck in, and someone picked it up. Oh, it's scared, and you know, trying to be like, don't pick it up, and I tried to help her get rid of it, and I woke up the next morning, and my hand was swollen from getting scratched by it, and she went to the hospital that night because her thumb swelled up and stuff.
Oh, that's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, this cat, actually, there's a scene in the book where I think Brad is having a flashback about the cat getting on its hind legs and like batting at him, and the real cat actually did that to us. It was really strange. It did kind of freak us out.
Aw, poor kitties. They always get the bad break.
Yeah.
I'm going to play another song now. It's about 20 past. What would you like me to play from the request? We got the Johnny Cash, Solitary Man, The Clash, and The New Pornographers.
Let's put on Johnny Cash.
Okay. This will be Solitary Man from American 3, which is actually, Solitary Man, the album, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a full cover album, too. It's a great album.
Right now I'm speaking with Matt Locks, and we will be back in a sec. CITR 101.9.
Melinda was mine till the time that I found her, holding Jim and loving him. Then Sue came along, loved me strong, that's what I thought, me and Sue, but that died too. Don't know that I will, but until I can find me a girl who'll stay and won't play games behind me, I'll be what I am, a solitary man, solitary man. I've had it to hear, be and where, love's a small word, a part-time thing, a paper ring. I know it's been done, having one girl who loved me, right or wrong, weak or strong. Don't know that I will, but until I can find me the girl who'll stay and will play games behind me, I'll be what I am, a solitary man, a solitary man. Don't know that I will, but until love can find me and the girl who'll stay and won't play games behind me, I'll be what I am, a solitary man, a solitary man, solitary man.
CITR 101.9 FM. That was Johnny Cash, Solitary Man, off of Solitary Man, with Mr. Tom Petty on background vocals. Now, have I got you here, Matt?
Yep.
There we go.
Yeah,
okay.
So I was actually going to mention that. Yeah, that's a really cool little snippet of information. Tom Petty backed him up on that album.
And I ruined it.
I think all the Heartbreakers did, too.
Yep, they were the band, pretty much, for that album. That was kind of neat. thing about the Johnny Cash series is he's now the great immortal, and everyone, you know, sacred to everyone. Well, not immortal, but much loved. Is like he had people like Nick Cave working on some sessions, and I'm a huge Nick Cave fanatic. Not his new stuff so much, but more of the old
stuff. He did a duet with Bob Dylan one time too.
Really?
Which song was it?
He did a fabulous cover of Mercy Seat off that album too.
Right, that one was great.
Johnny Cash, everyone knows Johnny Cash. We don't need to mention.
everyone should know Johnny Cash.
Everyone should. If they don't, well, there's something wrong with you. The Radiohead. Why that Radiohead song? Is it some kind of like, you know, certain era of time?
A little bit. That album came out when I was in my first year of college in 97, I guess. Or 98, I forget which half of that year. And it was just a really cool... That was back when MTV still played videos, and they used to play their videos all the time. And that particular video was a really cool video, and just a really sweet song on a really interesting album, probably their best album, OK Computer. But I just remember, because basically the video is centered on... his face the entire time. He's in a spacesuit, and then like halfway through the video, the spacesuit fills up with water.
I'm trying to remember the name of the director that did that, because all those Radiohead videos are just fantastic.
Yeah.
Now I think Michel Gondry did some, but I don't think that like they had an English guy who did a lot of their videos.
Yeah, I'm not sure offhand. I just remember that Carmen Police was a great one too. It's basically him in a car with a guy on fire. Running towards him, I think. Or no, he was chasing after a guy, at one point the car catches on fire. It's just such a rad video.
The guy on fire is a Spike Jonze video you're thinking of.
Oh, that one is? Oh, that's great.
Where the guy's going in slow motion.
I can definitely see that now.
And running slowly. All great videos, though. Good music videos. You all can go and check it out on YouTube.
Yeah.
God bless YouTube. I don't know what life would have been like without that. And actually, that's something that's interesting is I'm assuming that you're part of the generation that's like the last generation that grew up without the internet.
Sort of. As a kid, yeah, you're right. That must be fair. I haven't really thought of it that way. It's pretty interesting. The generation that grows up with the internet must be a whole nother thing. I think that might be why all kids' attention spans are kind of short these days, or at least so it seems. But I can't really criticize that, because I was the first generation that grew up entirely with with video. Like, the videos came out basically when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was the perfect babysitter for a lot of kids in my generation.
Oh, I'm going to watch this movie again. Yay! How many times have you seen Empire Strikes Back?
I don't even know.
Beyond counting.
Not worth getting into, I guess.
Oh, I love Empire now.
Oh, I do too. No,
I will be one of those few that admit it. You know what? I enjoy the... episodes 1, 2, and 3. 1 is a little difficult, but you know what? I still enjoy them for what they are.
Yeah, I had a bad feeling about Jake Lloyd when I saw Jingle All the Way. I saw that. That was his, I guess, one of his first movies. He's a little kid, but he was terrible.
Oh, the kid that played Anakin?
Yeah. Oh, he's a kid that I shouldn't know that. I shouldn't admit that I know that. But
that's okay. No, it's probably
kind of obvious. But if you've ever read my book, I'm definitely a Star Wars fan.
Although
I have to admit, it's been jaded since the last 3 movies. I feel a little betrayed.
And I'll make the reference to the toy shopping inside Scrollers from Oni Press, from Mintlocks. The toy shopping and finding the brother sister kissing scene toy. That was a nice touch.
Yeah, that was. I left that in there. That was in the very first pass I ever did at the script, which was, I guess, around 98 or 99. And at the time, it was when episode 1 was out, and I had been doing that basically with my friend Brad the entire summer. we went around trying to find the new Star Wars toys. So I had to leave that in there. I think that joke has been done before, but
it's okay.
I wanted to leave it in just for nostalgic reasons.
But my question is, the scene you use is from the end of Empire Strikes Back, correct?
Yeah.
But do they kiss then?
No. I actually did picture reference. It's that scene where he just came out of
the cryo tank.
Got mauled by the monster on Hoth, and that's when in Empire. That's when Leia kisses him.
Oh, okay.
She's off.
I just think of the original kiss in Star Wars as they, you know, the good luck jump across the ravine or whatever.
Yeah, it's way too many times they kiss each other in those movies. I think it's at least three. It's kind of weird.
You gotta wonder about George Lucas now, eh?
Oh, yeah.
He is an odd one. You've heard it here first. Ink studs think there's something wrong with George Lucas. Now, we're talking about your book, Side Schoolers. Much a reference to video games. One thing is the character that's, I guess, you, is having the dreams of being Link and his friend being Pikachu, and someone else ends up in that, right?
Yeah. Brian ends up at... First, he ends up as Ryu from Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Street Fighter is a bit of a theme through the entire book. But then, since it's my dream, it's a dream sequence in the middle. My character fell asleep in the car, and he's just having a dream that he's in Zelda. And the different main characters show up as a different, you know, video game character. Brad shows up as Pikachu, and Brian shows up first as Ryu, but then since it's my dream, I decide, like, that's not fair. You're not this heroic guy. So I change him to E. Honda, who is kind of an overweight sumo wrestler character.
And the most useless character in Street Fighter, I gotta
say. The slowest character, for sure.
You're not gonna say useless?
I won't say useless because I've seen people use characters who I thought were useless and just beat me badly.
Who is your Street Fighter character?
It was usually Ken.
Yeah, I could never do the uppercut.
It took me a lot of practice, and this is one. This, you know, this is probably junior high practice because I think that's when the first one came out when I was in junior high. But I was a huge fan of Street Fighter. I definitely wanted to throw some of those references in.
It's funny though because we don't have that anymore where there's that one kind of anthemic game. Well, I guess there is kind of. There's like the whole World of Warcraft thing where people getting fanatic with that.
Yeah.
But to me, like, Street Fighter was such, like, of the time, just like everyone played it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Every corner there was a fucking... Excuse me. There was a Street Fighter. Listener discretion is advised. I have a potty mouth. There was Street Fighter everywhere. And, you know, I was very happy, obviously, when the one where it could be M. Bison came out because that was my guy.
Yeah. You know, which one was that? I guess that was Street Fighter Champion Edition.
Yeah.
Like the second version of Street Fighter 2 that came out.
Yeah. And then did you ever try the first Street Fighter?
Yeah, it's funny because I came across it at like a rest stop like in Ohio one time. And I was like, oh, cool. It's the first Street Fighter. And I tried it and I'm like, this is so
lame.
Not like Street Fighter 2. It's really kind of questionable.
You could just be Ken or Ryu, I guess.
It's more of like a Double Dragon kind of game, only you jump very high.
Now, Double Dragon was a side scroller.
Mm-hmm.
So, what were some of your favorite side scroller games?
Mega Man is probably one of my favorites. And Zelda 2 had a side scrolling aspect to it, and that was, I think, by far my favorite Zelda game. Zelda 2 is just a really bizarre game. It's not like the others at all. You did have kind of the whole overworld thing, but whenever you ran into an enemy, it kind of stopped everything, and then you're suddenly zoomed into this side-scrolling 2D fight that you have to go through, kind of like a RPG,
only like Final Fantasy.
It's still hands-on.
Yeah.
But then you kind of have to walk off a little screen and fight your monster to continue on the overworld. It was really a strange game, but it just was so cool. Like, it must have hit me at the right age because it just was a little darker, and it was, I guess, because of the player control, it just had more of a spontaneous feel to it, or a little more, you know, a little more edge to it, I thought.
So I kind of missed out on that one. I missed out on the Link.
A lot of people don't like it, and yeah. I'm probably one of the few that I know that prefers that. I mean, I really enjoyed the Super Nintendo version. That was. Definitely an amazing game, but most people think that's their favorite, and I still think Zelda 2 is my favorite.
I'm going to have to go with the Nintendo 64 being my favorite Zelda.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm.
The first one.
I like that a lot, but I kind of feel like that was where it started going downhill.
It was all for the merchandising after that.
Yeah, I've got issues with Zelda as much as I love it. It's kind of a love-hate relationship now, sort of like with Star Wars. No, they still make some pretty fun games, and although I haven't tried the new one yet, the new one for the Wii, I haven't gotten a Wii yet.
No, I've got an Xbox, and I think that's as far as I'm going to go for the next 5 years.
Yeah, now that I'm a professional, I don't have time for video games.
So what is your day job?
Well, my day job, obviously, unfortunately, is not comics. Comics is more of a side thing at the moment. I'm a custom framer here in New York, a picture framer.
Oh, okay.
Which is a lot of fun, actually. It's a really really low key. You know, you're building things, and it's pretty cool.
No, it's a craft.
It's a craft.
It's not something where you just go, yeah, I'm a framer. It's actually quite a lot to it, too.
Yeah, it took me a while to get good at it, I guess, because you definitely have to know what you're doing.
And we're gonna go back to side scrollers now. I'm gonna ask more questions about it. How atypical? There's obviously You took up several liberties in the contemporary historical fiction.
Oh, yeah.
One thing I want to go back to is the video game dream sequence. Was that something that happened to you a lot, with a lot of people?
Fall asleep in the car?
No, the fall asleep and then,
because that does happen a lot.
The video game dream thing, the whole Tetris thing where you're, seeing Tetris blocks when you close your eyes.
Oh, yeah, that happens to me all the time.
Where you possess, video games possess your mind.
Yeah, not just with video games, too. It's kind of, if I'm playing something, Tetris is the perfect example, you're right. But I was thinking more there's a kind of an obscure video game that I might even go out on a limb and say it's the best game ever made. Definitely, I think, one of the best puzzle games ever made, and it was called Tetris Attacks. It wasn't like Tetris the way people know Tetris, where you've got falling blocks that you have to kind of fit together and break a line. It's more like a combination of Dr. Mario and Puzzle Fighter, where you actually can play multiplayer against somebody, and you basically have a bunch of color blocks that are raising from the bottom part of the screen, and you have a little cursor that covers two blocks, and whichever two blocks are over, you can press the button and swap them, and the goal is to match up three colors and they break and everything from the top falls down. And that sounds kind of simple, but you can get incredibly elaborate with it, because other things, when you make combinations, you drop stuff on your opponent, and it just is a really competitive game, and me and my friends would get really into that game. And it was a Super Nintendo game, although it did come out in a few other incarnations the past couple of years.
I'm kind of remembering it.
It's an addictive game, and it's so much fun. I would literally close my eyes and see those blocks switching, and when I try to go to sleep that night.
I'd say probably one of my favorite puzzle games would have been Bust a Move.
Bust a Move, that's a great game.
The Bubble spin-off.
Yeah.
God bless it. I'm going to play another song, and then we're going to come back and chat more about the book. What do you want to hear now? We got the choice between Rudy Can't Fail and The New Pornographers.
Let's listen to The New Pornographers.
Okay, Vancouver band.
Yeah.
So, CITR 101.9 FM, we'll be back in a sec with some more Matt Locks talking about side-scrollers from Oni Books.
Trail that wants to be
CITR 101.9 FM, the Inkstuds Radio Hour of Comics Fun, the show where we talk about comics. This week, my guest is Matt Locks, author, writer, artist.
Lover.
Lover of side-scrollers. Now, side-scrollers, you wrote, pencil-inked, and I'm guessing colored on the computer a little, the black and white shading?
Yep. All me. I didn't do the lettering, though. That's it. That's where I drew the line.
We'll let you pass with that one.
Although I might do the lettering on my next one.
So what's the process for you, putting together an epic contemporary historical fiction?
Well, let me think. Well, first, you know, the writing. The writing is probably the most tedious process for me. I'm more of a, you know, it doesn't come quite as natural as drawing, but that particular story had a long time coming, so a lot of it was pretty formed in my head, so the writing really wasn't that terrible. But I first wrote it, and I actually only wrote half of it, because it was a pretty long book. I wrote half of it, and then basically I did all my layouts together for each chunk, I guess, as to basically laying out each page, each panel per page, and how many pages it ends up to be. I guess a lot of artists / writers kind of do that as they're writing, but I just haven't figured out a good way for me to do that yet. So I kind of write the script almost like as if it's like a play, and then I break it down as I'm kind of laying out each page, very loosely, you know, very rough. With pencil or pen or whatever, and then I kind of go back into the script and kind of edit some stuff as I see fit. Then I pencil it. Pencils are relatively loose. Well, you know, not super loose, but not super tight either. I kind of do my tightening with the inking. I ink with a brush. My favorite kind of ink is Winsor Newton ink, Winsor Newton Black. It's really, for me, is the best. And then I have the fun job of scanning everything in.
All 207 pages.
Well, I do everything in kind of waves. They, you know, the guys at Oni like to kind of see progress.
Yeah.
So I can't just, like, say a year later, like, here, guys, done. Although I kind of feel like I definitely probably spent a little more time than I should have on some parts. Because the first chunk, they didn't really see anything until I had drawn about 100 pages. And then they're like, hey, we kind of want to see some of this. So I'm like, oh, okay. So I made photocopies and sent it to them. And then shortly after, I did all the scanning and the tone everything in Photoshop. It's just gray tones. No, you know, the color is not worth doing color and then converting it to gray.
Yeah.
So it's pretty simple. And at this point, it's like I have it down to kind of like a very fast science. Just kind of churn it out now.
Now, your other book that you have available from Oni Press, F-Stop. Tell me about that, because I have not read
it. That's a great book. I really enjoyed that. That was, you know, it was my first published work, basically, that I didn't publish in Kinko's. It was really cool. It was really cool working with another writer, too. Number one, I don't have to worry about any of the words, and number two, like, his, you know, I did the actual physical layouts, but, you know, it's all scripted for me. So, and Anthony is really a really nice guy to work with. Anthony Johnson was the writer for that book.
Now, the name sounds familiar. I can't remember what else he's written.
Well, right now he's doing a book called, for Oni, called Wasteland.
Okay.
And it's coming out in installments, floppy style, 24 pages.
I don't like that term, I gotta say.
Sorry.
Can't we just call it a comic?
Comic style.
There we go.
As opposed to trade paperbacks, which he's done a lot of original trades, as well as the traditional comics. Let me think. He's done a bunch of stuff. He did something with Ross Campbell for Oni.
Okay. Ross Campbell, who's currently getting acclaimed for his lesbian zombie epic.
Right.
Abandoned. Quite
right,
enjoyable.
Right. I haven't read it yet, but it looked cool.
And Wet Moon, also published.
Yeah.
By Oni Books.
Yeah, that's right. His art is fantastic. A little dark, but it's really, really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And is that something important to you, to kind of do a lighter comic, like something that's just, you read it and it's just fun?
Absolutely. I kind of early on, when I kind of decided I wanted to be in the comics industry if I could, I kind of saw that I kind of wanted to carve a niche being like humor, actually humorous comics, at least I hope are actually humorous comics, because they're really, even now, there isn't a lot of them. You know, you think of comics and you're like, you think of where they were when they were first being done, you know, in the early part of last century. There were, you know, so the point of them are they're the funny pages, they're the funnies, and like these days, there's not a whole lot of actually funny comics.
There isn't.
Aside, like, action comics with some humor in it.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to kind of, you know, I don't think all of my stories are going to be humorous, but so far I don't have a serious one lined up.
I do agree. Humor in comics is a lost art, and a lot of people who do humor comics really don't put it out much anymore. Like, Bob Fingerman doesn't even do much. Like, he did the zombie one, Recess Pieces, which is hilarious.
Oh yeah, I haven't read that one.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Check that out.
It's kind of Jack Davis art style esque. Beautiful. You know, a bunch of kids in elementary school fight zombies. That's good. Everything's to be zombies nowadays. But you know, a lot of other people don't. You know, Evan Dorkin occasionally will see something, but it's definitely something. And a lot of people just will easily turn to doing, you know, melodrama, sad comics, and I don't know, maybe it's more of a challenge to do a funny comic.
It probably is. I think part of it is genre, to be honest. You know, for only recently, only in the past maybe 4 years, or maybe a little more than that, has, I think, the industry kind of started to kind of flex a bit more, be a little more flexible, I guess. There have definitely been some groundbreaking things happening, you know, all the troubles of the 90s, you know, even during them, there was some great things coming out, like from the indie scenes, like, you know, Jeff Smith's Bone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's been, and that's like in what's considered a kind of a dark time for comics.
And Jeff Smith will actually be joining us, I'll just throw it in there in 2 weeks.
Excellent.
So you're in good company.
Yes. He's going to be at the New York Comic Con, and I'm going to try to meet him.
When is that happening?
Comic
Con.
Oh.
No. When is it happening?
Oh, when is it happening? Oh, I'm sorry. It's February 23rd through the 25th.
Nice.
I'm going to be there at the Oni table. Oni's going to be there. It's going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to it because it's going to be very. It's the first really big convention in New York City in years. You may have heard of the old ones that were, I think, kind of shut down maybe about 6 years ago or more. No, more than that. It was like over 10 years ago. But they haven't had a big one since the New York Comic Con.
It's an odd... New York is such an odd comic book city because there's so many talents there. So many people.
It's an amazing comics community here.
But
a lot of people talk about Portland, Oregon being like a big comics community, which is true.
But
New York is also...
It's
huge.
New York is more of the alternative crowd, I think. It's got both though,
because Marvel and DC are located here, you know, like 20 streets away from each other. But you're right. It's a very strong indie community here.
But the odd part, I went to a bunch of comic stores. I didn't make it to, was it Rocket Ship that's in Manhattan, in Brooklyn?
Yeah, Rocket Ship is great. If anyone's in Brooklyn, I definitely recommend Rocket Ship. It's on Smith Street. Here in Brooklyn.
Didn't make it there, but I made it to Jim Hanley's. Jim Hanley's was good. But every other comic store I went to was kind of like, eh. So that kind of disappointed me.
Jim Hanley's is great because everything is out. Like, it's all face out, so you really see everything that came out that week and everything that's available. It's pretty cool. But, yeah, there's a lot of great shops, though, here in New York. All over the place, too. Around Union Square, there's a comic shop called Forbidden Planet. I think
that's the one where the guy was a jerk to me.
Oh.
Maybe. There's one I went to where the owner was just a total tool.
You might be thinking of St. Mark's Comics.
Maybe that's it, where the guy just hires cute young girls and laughs at people.
St. Mark's Comics, the owner is, I've heard, you know, I've never met him, but I had a friend who actually worked there, and I've heard from several people and not so great things about the owners. But that's not my place to say anything about.
I will. I was making fun of him last week, and I'll make fun of him again this week.
All right, I'll stand behind that then. Rocket Ship is a great little store, too. They actually opened up about a year ago here in Brooklyn, and they kind of mainly have graphic novels. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But they do have a lot of everything, and I'm friends with the owners. They're some great people,
and they actually focus more on alternative comics.
Yeah, they do events like every couple of probably at least one a month, and in the summer it's almost every week, and they're always really fun.
They did a Meat House launch, I think.
Yeah,
for the latest issue.
I missed it because I was in Connecticut, but I heard it was good.
Lovely Connecticut.
That's the home state. So luckily, it's pretty close, so I can get out of the city and take a break.
I hope to make it to New York again one day. What do you have in the pipeline?
Well, I'm working on... I'm working on my next book for Oni, which is really... I'm very excited about. It's actually going to be an all-ages book. Not like a kid's book, but it's a, you know, good for everyone. Not as many curses, as much cursing as in side-scrollers.
Was there cursing in side-scrollers?
Yeah, there was some cursing.
I don't even remember.
Just ask my mom, there's cursing. it's an all-age book. It's got a tentative name of Welcome to Maine. It may change in the next coming months, but it's basically kind of following two kids on vacation for the whole summer in kind of a strange, mysterious town in Maine where basically things very strange, you know, very mysterious things happen, like there are sea monsters and there are ghosts and kind of just a fun experience. There's strange characters around town. It's kind of an old Victorian, like, sleepy little town, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited about it. I'm working on it right now.
You're in the tedious script phase?
Exactly, the tedious script phase. I can't wait till that phase is finished. I can go to the less tedious art phase.
Well, I want to thank you for joining me this week, Matt.
Thank you.
Like I said before, I quite enjoyed it. Side Scrollers by Matt Locks. You can find it in all the good comic stores. And if they don't carry it,
demand it.
They're not a good comic store if they don't take it. That's all I got to say. Say hello to your lady.
I will.
And I look forward to more.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
Okay. Bye.
Take care.
Matt Locks, like I said, author of Side Scrollers from Oni Press. It's a great book. I quite enjoyed it. I recommend more people read fun comics. Like we're saying, humor in comics is really a lost art. Bob Fingerman had a great one last year. Peter Bagg does a comic about once a year. You know, I'm going to do a little rant right now. He did a great comic for Reason Magazine, all about political beliefs in America, and the Comics Journal Message Board. Comics Journal Message Board, you suck. Whoever's on there going on rants for him doing his political beliefs in a comic, who cares? He did a great comic. Read it and enjoy, people. That's the thing that bugs me about the internet. People just can't enjoy. If you want to be judgmental, get a radio show. Okay, maybe not. Maybe I'm too judgmental. Not much happening in the Vancouver scene for comics community stuff. Go to RX Comics, Lucky's Comics, and check out some new stuff. There's always new great comics. I went to the last Comic-Con in the Heritage Hall, and I picked up some really nice stuff. Steph something or other, I can't remember her last name, but I quite enjoyed her mini-comics. I look forward to more. Maybe I'll try and hunt her down, see if she wants to join us one day. Next week, I'm going to be joined by Mr. Sean Esty, who does a comic called Skullcano. Is that it? Skullcano? Skullcano Press. I can't even remember. He'll be joining me with Joseph Bergen III, who's about a year ago relocated down to Las Vegas. Joseph used to do all the artwork for Terminal City before its most recent folding. His stuff is incredible. Both of them are incredibly talented boys. Joseph has new comics every day at uncle_white.livejournal.com. Check out his stuff. Sean's live journal handle is Mr_Esty. Both fabulous. Check out the podcast, crowncommission.com/inkstuds, or even the CITR website has podcasts, or just go into your iTunes, because I think everyone by this point owns an iPod. If you don't, you haven't drank the Kool-Aid yet. Week after that, February 15th, I will be joined by, like I said before, Jeff Smith, author of Bone, who has the new Shazam series from DC Comics coming out, and I'm quite excited because it's been a while since he had new comics, and this is going to be in color. Ooh, color comics. Why is everything I read black and white? And the week after that, I will be joined by Shannon O'Leary, who's driving up from San Francisco to do a signing February 22nd at Sophia Books. They're great comics. We'll go down there. They have good graphic novels, too. Tell them I say hi. And up next is Crimes and Treasons. What? Oh, and future guests will include on this show Mark Bell, hopefully, next month, and Robert Gregory, Gabrielle Bell, and... why am I gapping out? Liz Prince. Oh, man. So many good artists. So little time. Go buy comics. Inkstud's CITR 101.9. I'll end you with from the London Calling album, London's Calling, The Clash with Rudy Can't Fail.
Party people talking over some of the Inkstud's music.